Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to West Side Visions on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Brother Tom Bullock, and I'm with my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed. Sister Reed, are you there? Sister Reed, are you on the air? All right. As you can see, once again, we're starting the day off with technical difficulties, but I'm quite sure Sister Reed will be with us shortly. And in the meantime, we will go ahead. Get started.
Brother Bullock, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
You know how
we
say
I'm looking forward to a really good show tonight.
It's never a dull moment.
This is true.
Oh, yeah. I think tonight's show will be a fast-moving one, and with all the things that's going on lately, especially where this topic is concerned, I know that's how it's going to go down. I just happened to be channel hopping and see that we've had another mass shooting, and unfortunately this one was at the end of a graduation ceremony.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
You know, hopefully, you know, I know some lives were lost, and, you know, we always talk about thoughts and prayers, but this is when you reach a point where it ain't even about thoughts and prayers, you kind of get numb, and it's like, when does it stop? When do we get a control on these weapons and people stop losing their lives unnecessarily behind this?
Well, I don't know what it's going to take for the supposedly most powerful nation in the world to get this right. So it's so easy to buy guns, to own guns in America, and Second Amendment activists really believe that reducing the number of guns is not going to hurt anybody. Well, there is a process that we can do to tighten the easy availability of getting a gun. And I have no problem with police and law enforcement going in and getting illegal guns off the street. But something has to be done to stop innocent lives from continuing to be taken.
You are absolutely correct. It makes no sense. And for those states like Texas and Florida and Missouri, they want to pass these laws to where people can just go buy a gun and no longer have to register it or get a license to have it. You know, that is absolutely asinine to me.
And not only that, Brother Bullock, but individuals who, while not participating in mass shootings, you know, will shoot first and ask questions later, like the mom of four who went to the door of her neighbor who had thrown something at her children. And instead of answering the door or asking whatever through the door, the neighbor shoots through the door, hitting the mom and killing her in front of one of her children.
Yeah, I read that. And that happened in the state of Florida. And the killing part about that is this person, I believe, had some kind of running issue with the family. So, you know, we'll see. But tonight, you know, we're going to dive into these GOP politics and the way they roll with race. And I already? Okay. Let's see who this is on our line.
Okay.
Caller 8262. You're on West Side Visions. Who are we speaking with, please?
My name is Think. Think for yourself. I was listening to your show. I was going to jump in after you talk, but since you let me on, I would like to talk about this gun thing. I own a gun. I own a gun, and I'm working on getting a pistol. And I'm okay with people like me owning a gun, but I tell you 100%, I do not want everybody to own a gun. I don't think a lot of us are mentally qualified to own a gun. And you could see with all these mass shootings, the craziness out here. I used to live in the ghetto areas, and I tell you, I don't want to see a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, or a 10-year-old owning a gun. These Second Amendment people, they want to make it so that even 10-year-olds can buy guns. Where you could go to the corner store. They said that in the past, corner stores used to sell guns. But that's in the past. I don't think we should live like that now. That's my opinion on that.
Okay, you know what? And, you know, I'll tell you how our show operates. You know, your opinion is your opinion, but I'm going to be honest with you. I was in the military. I've used high-powered weapons. As a citizen, I don't think I need to own an M16. I can defend myself with a Derringer. I'm not against anyone owning a gun, but like you said, I do believe that there should be some checks and balances to owning a gun, because there are a lot of people out there proving that owning a gun is not something they need to be doing.
Exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, for me, I was raised by people who were raised in rural Texas, and so guns were a very, you know, important part of their lives for hunting purposes and things like that. And the young boys learned early on how to own a gun, clean a gun, take care of a gun. And so the culture is a little bit different than what we're talking about with these Second Amendment people. But I agree with Brother Bullock. There is no reason for a regular citizen to own an AR-15. There's just not. And my father, who was a hunting enthusiast, had several rifles and a handgun. And he also was in the military. And he explained to his daughters that guns were nothing to play with, and you have to be careful with them. So I think we're all on the same page when it comes to that. At least I hope we are. And I know that's not the focus of our show tonight. So, caller, I hope you're going to stick around and listen to what we're saying about the rest of the things that are going to be going on with the show tonight.
Yeah, definitely. And just to clarify, I personally think that we should be able to own like automatic guns, but we should, the people that own them should go through a rigorous test to make sure that they're mentally stable. Just like driving a car, you take a test and you go take a course to learn to know how to drive a car. And I think that for someone to own a gun, they need to go through a similar process to make sure that they're mentally stable before you just give them a gun. That's my two cents. But thanks for having me on.
Hey, we appreciate the call. You have a good rest of the night. And if you hear something else you want to talk about, call back in.
All right.
You know, I appreciate that call from Think for Yourself. And he does have a point, Think for Yourself. But, yeah, there should be some checks and balances. And like he said, maybe some folks need to pass a competency test in order to put their hands on a gun.
Maybe they do. he and I think differently about the need for an AR-15. But, you know, it's America, and we can agree to disagree without there being any, you know, hatefulness or rancor. That's what this country is, should be all about. So.
You are absolutely correct. Agree to disagree and agree to disagree in a peaceful way. I like the way you did that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Without further ado, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about racism in politics, GOP style. And I know some people out there are probably going to say, why does it always seem like, you know, your show is beating the drum about the GOP? That's because I haven't got to the Democrats yet. Their day is coming, but today belongs to the GOP.
That's true, and we will be talking about the Democrats because, really, in some instances, you can't talk about one without talking about the other. But you're absolutely right, Brother Bullock. You know me. I always like to lay a historical foundation for a lot of stuff that we talk about on the show, and I want to just read a quick paragraph. That was written by a reporter for the BBC called Clive Myrie. And he writes, and this was just before the 2020 election. And he writes, why is racism still such a problem for the most powerful country on earth? Next paragraph. You think a civil war might have been the last word on the issue. The slave-holding states of the Old South did battle with the Northern states in 1861, fighting for the right to extend slavery into the vast lands of the West. As America grew, the South lost, and President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves. But the South was never admonished for having slaves in the first place, and history now paints this, rewrote this quickly as a civil war, as just a quarrel between brothers. And that's the end quote of that. But we have to remember that if Lincoln said himself, if he could have saved the Union without freeing the slaves, he would have done it. Okay, so that's the foundation that we're talking about with race as it comes to politics in this country. But we're talking about a mindset here that goes pretty deep.
Yes, and
we're talking about a mindset that goes pretty deep.
That mindset continues on today, and you see it in the politics of the GOP, and you see it in everyday life in the South.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And, you know, for me, Brother Bullock, I believe that the steady rise of hate from the GOP is part of the ongoing backlash against the presidency of Barack Obama. And instead of talking about a post-racial America, we're still talking about a neo-racist America and the GOP on steroids when it comes to race. So we're talking roid rage here for the GOP. And it was that kind of rage, that kind of backlash against Obama that helped fuel the presidency of 45 and has given this rise of hate speech in the GOP. Now, they close it in different things like anti-woke and things like that. But for those of us who are of a certain age, we understand racism and know it when we see it and hear it.
We know it when we see it and hear it. And, you know, it they can try to dress it up any way they want to. Those chickens are still coming home to roost. It is funny how the GOP, the grand old party, that Republican Party, you know, as much as they like to say, you know, we believe in accepting people for their content and it ain't about their race or their color, but yet this is the way they approach certain things.
Right.
And Sister Reed, go ahead and take over the mic. Give me one moment.
Okay. Well, Brother Bullock has set it up so far as talking about the GOP. And, you know, I always like to come from a historical standpoint. And everybody who knows their U.S. history knows that at one time the political philosophies of Republicans were on the anti-slave, anti-abolitionist bent, and then that got split after the Civil War ended. And the Democratic Party, you know, started with a whole different bent, and they were more progressive and more open-minded in their politics. Well, we know from the 1960s and the Dixiecrats and all of that, that were pro-segregationists, that there has been an ongoing portion of the Democrats who had, you know, those major segregationist dreams. And so we can even bring that forward to the 1994 Crown Bill that Bill Clinton's administration sent through. And this is something that our former President Joe Biden worked on, and I think he's going to have to probably answer for that later on, because this was the age in the mid-90s of mass incarceration. This was one of those things where it's just, let's just lock up people and throw away the keys. And if you're talking about mass incarceration, then, of course, you're talking about black and brown people, maybe poor whites, but definitely black and brown people who are incarcerated disproportionate to the makeup of the national population in this country. So we have to start asking each other, you know, why are things the way that they are? And, you know, we need to also ask ourselves, why are the racist politicians and their policies getting so much traction in this country? Somebody is buying into the idea of white supremacy. They're buying into the idea of white entitlement and white privilege. And so this goes against absolutely what our country is supposed to be about and what the U.S. Constitution is supposed to be about. But remembering, too, that when the Constitution was written, people of color, black people, were not considered human beings. And when they were considered as anything, they were considered as property and three-fifths of a person for tax purposes. So our country has always been a conundrum when it comes to race. And people don't want to talk about this. And this is not just about politics, y'all. I mean, that's our subject for tonight. But if you look at so many things that happen in our country, you will see a layer of racism that is on top of that. For example, after World War II and the GIs were coming back, a lot of GIs used their GI bills to buy homes, go to school, and so the race of the suburbs around from the early party. Well, in order to make those suburbs accessible, they had to build the highway system and build highways and so on and so forth. Well, it just so happens that those highways, a lot of times, divided poor areas of different cities, destroyed black areas of urban cities, and nothing was said about it. Of course, this is the age of racial covenants that were in a lot of housing buildup. So if you even look at the history of highways and infrastructure in the U.S., you will see a layer of racism in that. You know, like, oh, you know, you live on the other side of the track, or you live on this side of the field. It's true for Fresno as well, with Highway 99 and how it tore through southwest Fresno, west Fresno, and divided downtown. And it still is a dividing line in the community of West Fresno, which just fuels the gentrification efforts that are going on right now in West Fresno. But that's a different subject for a different day. Brother Bullock, are you back? Okay, I guess he's not back yet. Well, friends and neighbors, I have to say that the GOP has been pretty consistent about how they have done this whole racism thing. And I think part of it had to do with the last year's administration when he started this so-called war on drugs. Now, Richard Nixon really thought that he was going to kill a couple of birds with one stone with this war on drugs. So basically, he was going after what he considered hippies, undesirables, and he was going after black people. And this is a documented fact from some of the things that we've read from FBI records during that time. So this war on drugs was a direct threat to black people in this country. And it continued on even into the administrations of Bill Clinton. And, you know, and that was when Joe Biden was still his senator. So when Brother Bullock talks about how this racism has touched both parties, he was telling the truth. So we have to understand that if you are going to have a military / industrial complex that needs black and brown bodies to survive and has this sort of draconian overlay, we have to understand that we need to get people registered to vote and voting in mass numbers to try to get these races out of office. That's just common sense. So we're hoping that we get some people calling in who want to talk about this particular issue. And if you want to call in, the number is, oh my goodness, I'm losing my place here. The number is 999-563-3043, and you can find that on our link as well for West Side Vision. It's important that we continue to have these dialogues about race and politics in this country. This is one of the reasons why when we did the show about dark money and how that is fueling a lot of GOP races, and actually that is, happens for both sides of the aisle. Dark money is fueling both sides of the aisle. And we need to understand that if you are paying thousands and millions of dollars in to support somebody's campaign, you're going to be looking for something in return. You're going to be looking for support of your business entity. You're going to be looking for support of your legislation submittals from, you know, lobbyists and things like that. You want to get something for your money. And this is one of the reasons why we need the Disclosure Act that was sponsored by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, and it will force the money group to disclose the source and the amount if the amount is more than like $10,000. They'll be forced to disclose the owners and mandate the election ads who their sponsors are. So this is an important thing that we need to talk about if we want to talk about a real democracy. And my question is this: where do all of us fall with this? You know, what is it with racism in America, the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead, Sister Reed. Don't let me cut you short.
No, I was just taking a breath. Go ahead and take it, Brother Bullock.
You know, the politics of race has been with us for a very, very long time. It has taken different turns and different shades. And For example, recently, one of our GOP presidential candidates, Ron DeSantis, who has this thing of sending migrants out of his state and charter buses into areas that he considered to be sanctuary states or sanctuary cities, has just recently sent 36 migrants out of the state of Texas via Florida, California, to Sacramento.
Right.
His people claim that they had nothing to do with that, but it has been proven that they were involved.
Right. I understand a second group has come now. I don't know if that's the DeSantis as well, but you might
say that again.
I understand that there was a second group that was flown in on a private jet.
Yeah. They flew some in Friday, and they flew some in Saturday and Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I really hope the Attorney General is looking into this.
Yes, the Attorney General is now looking into that. Governor Newsom has said himself that he finds DeSantis to be the sheriff of Bucks R County, which is near San Antonio, wants criminal charges filed against him for taking these people out of Texas and shipping them to California.
Right.
So,
that's good.
Yeah, that's what's going on. I see that we have a caller on the line, so let's find out what the deal is going to be. Caller 3943, you're on West Side Visions. Who am I speaking with?
Good evening. My name is Yvette, and I'm calling from California.
Hello, Yvette. How are you doing this evening?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you two?
You know, you see what we have up, and you see what we're talking about. So, Yvette, what do you have to say?
Well, here in California, we are a sanctuary state. And so, I mean, we have so many homeless people in our big metropolitan areas like Los Angeles and San Francisco. But yet, you know, we're still taking people in. And I think that the reason for DeSantis sending immigrants or migrants or people to other states is because when you have no, they're basically being sent to your state without, in the dead of night, and the president was doing this as well, President Biden, and he was doing this to different states, and you have this influx of people. What do you supposed to do with them? You know, you drop them off at City Hall or wherever.
I have a question for
you. Yeah.
People to different states?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
When did President Biden?
That was my question.
I'll look that up for you, and I'll give you that. It was
in California myself, but I want to know. You just
hello.
So caller, I'd like that information about Biden because both Brother Bullock and myself reside in California, and I don't remember Biden being a part of something like that. So if you have that information so that we can verify what you're saying, that would be great. It'd be a great help to both Brother Bullock and myself and the other listeners.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it wasn't necessarily to California that he was that the president had sent migrants. I'm just saying that he was sending them to different states as well. And so,
do you recall what year that was?
I have, yes, actually from the New York Post in 2021. And it says, Biden secretly flying underage migrants into New York in dead of night. And then...
Yvette?
That was 2021.
That was not the president.
No.
Of New York that did that.
No, but Biden was sending by plane in 2021 when he was president because he won the 2020 election.
It might have happened when he was president, but he was not the instigator of that policy. But Yvette, I want to ask you something. Do you, after we get this cleared up, I want to find out if you think DeSantis was correct in doing this.
I think that none of them are correct in doing it, but I think that the overflow of people coming, they have to be put somewhere, and rather than to be put in cages, you know, the people are, you know, busing them or flying them to, you know, different states, and mostly to the sanctuary states because that's where they welcome them. But they're people. They're not boxes of products or anything, and it's just sad. It's just sad that they're just being transported like cattle.
No, but they're not property, and they're not political playthings where they're at. They're working, they're paying taxes, but yet Greg Abbott, DeSantis, wants to snatch these people up and ship them off in the dead of night. Martha's Vineyard.
Right.
Well, as I understand it, they're not snatching them up. They're as they come over from the border and cross over.
They're promising them. They are promising them. They are promising them work. Let me tell you what they're doing. They're promising them work, homes, and education in other states, knowing that they're not going to deliver on anything because they don't have the power to do so. And yes, they are hurting these people up because they are telling them lies to get them on these planes.
Yes, and that's really terrible. It's a bait and switch kind of thing that they're doing, and politically. And this is wrong on so many levels. We have to understand this. This is wrong.
So let me ask you,
right.
Say we were in Mexico, uh-huh, and the same thing was happening to white Americans, and they were being raped out of Mexico. How would you feel about that?
Well, this may sound harsh and cruel, but knowing that they are crossing, you know, into another country, well, now you're at the mercy of that country. You can't be expected or expect anything from a country that you didn't come from, basically. So if I were to go into Mexico or Poland or someplace else and they arrested me because I didn't go the right way as far as seeking asylum from any country along the way to Poland or, you know, to Mexico, if there was a nearby country and Mexico was far away, I need to go to that next country and tell them I'm seeking asylum because I'm being persecuted for my religion or whatever it is that they're seeking asylum for in the United States. But so when you do that and you take that risk that these countries are just going to open arms, they're not going to. There's a lot of countries abroad that do not accept migrants. You know, as far as just open the doors. They were for a while, but then they saw how things were, these people weren't being vetted, and I'm not saying the people that were coming over the border, Mexican border, because they're not all Mexicans. We get people from Sudan.
No, they're not.
But on the other hand, Yvette, you have countries like Ireland and the UK that will hire people from Poland, the Ukraine, Romania, to do jobs that their population may not necessarily want to do, whether they're cleaners or, you know, child care workers or you know, jobs like that. And so they create a demand for these migrants, these immigrants, these people without legal papers, and they're hiring them. And nobody's going after these countries. You know,
nobody's going after the employer.
Right. Nobody's going after the employers. And it's the same thing in America.
And the same thing is happening here.
Problem without these people hiring these folks that are coming over. So I think we need to change the priority and stop trying to demonize the workers that want to come and seek a better life. And we need to go after the employers that are hiring these folks.
So if we went after the employers, then they wouldn't be able to get jobs. So then what do we do with them?
I thought we didn't want them to be coming, so they don't. It's okay if they don't have jobs. We want them to stay in their own country.
Oh, I see.
Without demonizing the folks. And this
exactly. See, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah,
I agree.
The migrants are a problem. You know, you want to holler the migrants are a problem, but then you don't. You just said, well, why would we go after the employers? Then they won't have a job. We can't have it both ways.
No,
right.
We can't.
You go after one, you have to go after the other.
Yes.
Exactly.
And
so
we just want them to come the right way as far as, you know, whether you're seeking asylum or you're just seeking to be a citizen of the U.S., so you apply and mm-hmm. you go through the steps and all of that, and so then you have the you know, citizenship to get a job and do everything you want to do, and that's great. That's wonderful. That's contributing to our society. I know that mm-hmm. President Trump, under his presidency, he had negotiated a deal with Mexico, because the majority of the people were coming from Mexico at the time, but they come from everywhere. But the car manufacturing company, American, that decided to put their in Mexico, he had signed because they still had to pay U.S. taxes. They're still connected to the U.S. even though they had their plant there, a plant, because they had plants everywhere. But anyway, making them pay the amount of wages that, what is it they call, prevailing wage, the wage that that they would have to pay an American worker, basically, versus moving your plant to Mexico so you can get cheap labor. So he did that in order to improve the lives of the people that were hired so that they didn't need to come here to the United States.
And
they can make money.
What was the name of this company?
I'm trying to think of the car manufacturing. It's like, I want to say Ford, but it's not Ford. I'll look that up here too.
Because I can tell you right now, that deal never went through. And
no, it didn't.
Well, it went through with, you know how we had NAFTA? I think it was NAFTA. So the new deal that was signed.
Well, NAFTA was something that Trump was trying to get rid of,
he signed a new deal
that was like NAFTA, is what I'm saying.
He signed a new deal that was like NAFTA.
I'm sorry, Yvette, are you a Trump supporter? If we can ask that, I don't want to be too forward asking you that, but it sounds as though you are pro-Trump or a member of the Republican Party. And if so, I mean, we welcome you to the show for this discussion, but we are talking about race and racism in the GOP tonight. So that's one of the reasons that I'm out.
Oh, okay. We can talk about that.
Okay.
I would be happy to.
I was wondering, is the door going to be big enough?
Yeah.
I'm an independent. My husband is an independent. We vote basically with whoever we believe is going to lead this country. We voted as far as they're all. I can't seem to find a decent one, man. It's so hard. And there have been occasions that where we didn't vote. We didn't vote in the last election at all because having to vote for lesser two evils, it's like, what do you do? So.
Yeah. living in a democracy.
You could have wrote.
What's that? Say that again.
You could have written your own name in.
Oh, sure, sure. I've just been so disgusted with the politics lately and the two parties and the way they bicker and I don't know. I'm Hispanic.
Yeah, but you know what? Okay. That's fine. And you say you're an independent? So that means you're kind of like on the lines of Bernie Sanders and Kristen Sinema.
That's what I was wondering.
So,
well, not really. I mean, I'm about center, but definitely not Bernie Sanders. I'm not for socialism.
Okay, so you're more leaning towards GOP candidates and more conservative, family-oriented. You against big government, more for state-run stuff. Is that? I'm just trying to get a feel of where you're coming from. Yvette.
Oh, okay. You know how they have the old, I guess, Democrat Party. I'm of the old Republican Party, I guess you could say, because the new Republican Party, it just seems to have gone off the rails.
The Reagan Republican, Goldwater, Reagan, that kind of.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I understand why you're declaring as an independent, because the current GOP has issues. And that's one of the reasons why we're talking about this tonight, because racism is running rampant in this country. And like I said at the top of the show, I think a lot of it is a backlash against the presidency of Barack Obama. You know, Barack couldn't get a break. He was up against a Congress that openly declared that he wasn't going to get anything done during his presidency. And that's really hard to govern when you have Congress, both houses working against you.
Well, we always hear people say, well, he had the House and the Senate, you know, for one term or one session, I guess it is.
Why do you think racism continues to be such a big problem for the GOP?
I'm sorry. There's a lot of feedback, so I heard your question as far as, I think, how does racism...
Why do you think racism continues to be so prevalent in the GOP?
I wouldn't say it was racism. I would say more classism. An income inequality thing, more than I would say racism. It just because it's all the lower class or lower income families that are being left behind with the policies and regulations that the GOP is creating, and so basically they're creating that gap. So people like me have to live in a studio apartment with my husband, you know, can't afford a house, can't afford much.
Okay. And we have a lot of people going through that. You call it classism. We call it racism. When they come in and redline a neighborhood or fix it to where certain jobs don't come to where we live, but go to other populations of other populations.
Like what? Can you give me an example?
For example, say a call center comes to town. They're in a neighborhood where you have blacks, Hmongs, Hispanics. No, they're going to find a nice white area to build the call center in.
Right.
And they're going to get the first. And they're going to get the first shot at those jobs.
And the GOP has something to do with it? I'm sorry, I'm not finding the connection.
Well, yeah, because the politicians who are dealing with this major employer just happen to be Republicans.
Okay.
They take over planning commissions. They take over city council positions. They gerrymander the districts in which we vote in. They go in, redraw the line so that it's heavily Republican favorite that way.
True. It's very true. And it's important for people to, and this is one of the reasons why I'm so happy that we're doing this show and others like it, because so many people don't understand that racism, there's a thin layer of it that covers most of life in America. And, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, you liberals, you're this, you know, you're just always bellyaching that everything is about this. Well, that's because everything is about this. And if you live in our neighborhoods, if you walk in our shoes, you could see that. And people, you know, now they're talking about this whole woke movement. I don't understand what that is. Well, I understand what it is because people were talking about this after Michael Brown got killed in the South, and people were like, well, stay woke, stay on your toes, you know, stay on a lookout. But now the GOP is even using that in a racist way. You know, they're anti-woke now. And that's just a buzzword, you know, a trigger.
And that's all it is.
Yes, thank you, Brother
Bill.
I understand the woke movement as far as the Republican Party goes are basically businesses that will cater to a small percentage of people over basically the, you know, the populace. And when they do that, they end up losing money because, you know, you have a majority of the people that don't promote or don't believe in or don't want to have anything to do with a small community, the LGBTQ, I guess, trans people. And so that's where the woke go broke comes from. They explained it in the committee hearing. But so you can't be racist, I guess, against LGBTQ.
Of what woke is, Brother Bullard?
Well, you know, my thing is, just recently, Casey DeSantis went to Iowa. They went on this bike ride with Joni Hurst, and she had on a leather jacket that said, Florida, where woke goes to die. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
Florida is a state that ranks 46 in economic opportunity, but yet you're spending state budget money to fly migrants up out of the city. You're spending state budget money to come up with laws to attack migrants who have come there to work legally, sign their papers, apply for asylum, everything. And now you're begging these same people that you're demonizing not to leave your state because your summer crops are not getting picked. But according to MAGA and the GOP, we're willing to do whatever jobs need to be done. Okay, well, why can't you get out in the field and do the job the migrants were doing? Mm-hmm. If it was good enough for them, why isn't it good enough for you?
Exactly.
I didn't hear. I'm sorry.
Don't try to dress up racism in classism, because racism is truly out there.
Well, I think there's going to be racism everywhere to some degree. It's not anything that could be really, you know, stamped out completely, because it's a person's personal opinion or thought. It's not a right thought or a good opinion. I'm just saying that you can't control what people think or how they feel.
I hear what you're saying, Yvette, but there is a difference between prejudice, how you feel about somebody based on race or, you know, their sexual identity or whatever, as opposed to racism where you automatically, as opposed to racism where you have the power to do something to this person. I mean, you know, there's a difference between, you can be prejudiced all you want as long as you keep it to yourself, but racism is when, you know, somebody walks into Mother Emanuel Church and kills 9 people because they're black. That's the difference between prejudice and racism. That's just my opinion.
Okay. No, I like that. That's good. Okay. And
that's an honest statement.
And, sure, absolutely. It's a true statement. You can't debate that, what she said. Because there are prejudice and racism.
Because we want to eliminate as much of it as we can. The people who have the power to make these decisions, you know, we want to bring it to their attention. So, not just let it go like, oh, well, it's always, and this is not about what you just said, Eva. This is about, oh, well, that's the way we've always done it in the GOP. No, it doesn't have to be like that. This is what America is about. This is what politics are about, change making, you know, voting in people
exactly.
who are going to do the will of the people. Thank you, Brother Bullard. Go ahead.
Well, the last thing in the world that we ought to be trying to do is normalize racism like it's just the regular thing to do, because it is not. There should be no room in it. For example, Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley is East Indian, but let America tell Nikki Haley is a dyed-in-the-wool white American. Why? Because at some point, Nikki Haley chose to turn her back on her ethnicity and her people in order to be accepted. No one should have to do that.
No.
She was the governor of South Carolina. She helped Tim Scott get into his political position. Why? Because they kind of had the same mindset. To this day, Tim Scott will tell you, well, it's not about being black. It's about the content of my character. But yet his being black helped him get to where he got.
Right.
Whether
if it helped him to get to where he is, then he didn't experience racism then. Because he wouldn't have been able to get to where he's at.
Brother,
I hate to tell
ahead.
You this, but he has experienced racism, even though he won't admit it.
He has experienced racism. He has been stopped multiple times driving while black because he was driving a new car, and the police just figure, okay, well, this guy stole it. And, you know, the thing is that he didn't get to where he is just based on the content of his character. He got to where he is because the GOP needed him as one of their tokens. You know, that he was going to talk the party line and talk about this bootstrap biography that he and Nikki Haley have written for themselves to say, oh, look, you know, we're colorblind in the GOP, when the majority of us out here know that that's not true. They know that that's not true. And that's true of other GOP candidates. I mean, you know what I would like to have seen, both of you? I would have liked to have seen somebody like Colin Powell run for president and see if he would have made it, because he was more cut from the Ronald Reagan kind of, Billy Goldwater kind of Republican. But that wasn't going to happen, and he didn't even try.
No. No, he may be a Republican, but he's not the right kind of Republican. And yes, he is from that Goldwater. He is from that Goldwater Ronald Reagan era. His mindset is kind of like that. But even that wouldn't save him because it didn't help Michael Steele.
No, it did not. No, it did not help him. It did not help him at all. So this is one of the reasons why we do this show, because we need to keep beating the drum about racism in politics in America. And Brother Bullock, you laid it out beautifully when you said that we're not just, you know, beating up on the GOP. We'll be talking about the Democrats, too. We'll be talking about them, too.
Yes, we will have a day when we deal with them also. Because in America, politics is politics. And there is no perfect side. Just like the Republicans have issues, the Democrats have issues. Independents have issues. One of the biggest problems in the GOP is that you have a group that's mad with their current Speaker of the House because they felt like he let them down and gave away too much. And my thing is this, neither side got everything they wanted. Politics is one of those things where you have to make concessions in order to get what you want.
You've got to compromise.
And that's both sides.
Certainly. But the reason why Republicans are mad at McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, is because he had promised ahead of his becoming Speaker, one of the conditions of him becoming Speaker was that he would not raise the debt ceiling because we need to get our spending under control. You don't have to default on your payment if we don't raise the debt ceiling. But the debt ceiling is, and I just learned this year, and you can look it up. It's easy to find what the debt ceiling is the actual interest only on what we owe. And that's every time we raise the debt ceiling, we borrow money in order to pay what we were supposed to be paying is the debt down. But the reason why we're at $23 trillion is because we're paying the interest. So instead of making spending cuts, he went ahead and raised the debt ceiling, so now it doesn't have a cap on it until after 2025, and so that's why they're
just like you looked at it.
We're gonna bust. Yeah. We're gonna go bust.
Well, just like you looked at it, I looked at it, and my thing is this: you know, people always want to say, "Well, you know, you keep raising the debt ceiling." Well, one of the other problems was Republicans for decades have wanted to get their hands. I'm sorry. That's money that people like me, society, and you, if you work, you work for, you put in, because at some point you knew in your lifetime, should you know, mix to that, you were going to need something to live off on. That's why you paid your taxes. That's why you paid into it.
Not entitlement.
That is actually your money. Does it belong to the state? Does it belong to the country? It belongs to those of us who worked and put it in. So
right,
why
that falls under mandated spending.
Exactly. So why does the GOP feel like they have a right to take it and spend it the way they want to?
Well, they don't. That's mandated spending. And then we have appropriations, 12 appropriations, which is our agriculture, you know, everything else basically under those 12 categories.
Exactly.
And so that's where
they can
cut. But if it's mandated spending, they can't spend it or they can't spend it or cut it. If it's mandated, they can't touch it.
I don't know what your situation is. I hope it's a good one. But I did hear you say that you and your husband was living in a studio apartment and you couldn't afford to buy a home at this point. That should never be. We live in a country that people like to brag about being America is the richest country in the land, in the nation, in the world. Well, there's no way in the world that every American should not be able to own some type of home.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And here's my thing is presidents and different Congresses, doesn't matter, either side of the aisle, feel like they have this blank checkbook where they can just send money to all these other countries before taking care of their own. And like you said, there's no reason in the world why we shouldn't have better health care, you know, certain things that are necessities and opportunities for the American people to thrive so that we can be the country that we are supposed to be. But because we're sending everything out, you know, now we have to make budget cuts and everything and sacrifice here, and we can't even, you know, take care of ourselves before we're trying to take care of everybody else. And that's, you know,
but you know what?
So maddening.
I don't disagree with you, Carl. I really don't disagree with you, but we have to think, too, that the GOP is all about privatization, whether it be health care or, you know, lending or whatever. They don't want the government to be a part of that. They want private industry to run that. And, of course, private industry is going to squeeze every dime that they can get out of the people that they're dealing with. And so,
right.
Once again, you can't have it both ways. Yeah, they're sending all this money for aid to other countries when it should be here. We've got enough money to take care of everybody here with health care.
Well,
we would.
Home ownership.
Yeah.
We have enough money to do that. But the
let
GOP
me say this about that.
They'll say, oh, well, that's socialism. You know, that's not the American way. So I think we have to reprioritize what's important to us and then vote accordingly.
Yeah, I also think, though, I mean, our government is lousy at anything that they do for the most part. They're too bloated, they're too slow and unorganized, and you have to, you know, you're waiting on the phone forever for them to get back to you if you're lucky enough to get through, you know, to some of these agencies, whether it's your, you know, government health or government SNAP or whatever it is. And so to have them control the health care, I don't think so. I'm sorry. I have to disagree there, because if they're going to be in charge of the health care, oh, boy. They can't even take care of our veterans properly.
Yeah, and I was getting ready to say, excuse me.
I have friends who are British, okay, and while they might have to wait a long time if they, you know, need something that's routine, everybody in that country is covered by health care. And I've had, you know, friends who had major surgery that live in England and didn't pay a dime.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we need to think about what's more important, because it doesn't have to be perfect, but it's better than what's going on right now where people are dying on the street because they don't have health care. But now with affordable health care that Obama got through, there's a way for people to get coverage. It might not be the best coverage, but it is coverage. And those are government programs. So I just,
you know, let me say this, ladies. One of the things that happens here when you have a House and a Senate and a president, just the other day, I'm sitting there and I'm watching a Senate vote, and they're voting on a veterans bill. Veterans, that's my group. People
mm-hmm.
who serve this country, people who put their time in. And I'm sitting there watching how all these Republicans are stepping to the mic and voting nay on taking care of burn pit victims, veterans who were exposed to chemicals that were burned in these burn pits that came back from Vietnam and Korea, different places, the Gulf Wars. And I'm standing here watching all these guys under the Republican flag party step up to the mic and vote no, but yet we'll turn around and talk about how much they care about veterans. And my thing is, if you care about veterans, why is it you want to vote against a bill that will help them? If you care about children, Why is it you want to vote against a bill that will help them?
And a lot of the bills, actually, the majority of the bills that get, you know, passed or put proposed are, you know, thousands of pages long because they have other things in there, too. And those things may outweigh, as far as not voting for a particular bill, than for a particular bill. And they both do it. And so what I would like to see in Congress, and so I think the discussion would probably be more productive if we discuss what we would like to see in Congress and, you know, done. And so what I would like to see done is if they have a proposal for the veterans and medical, whatever it is, burn victims or, you know, people who have had amputations and so forth, that's it. Give me 2 pages, be concise. Tell me what you want to do or what's going to be done for these people if this law is passed, signed by the president, and that's it. I want to be able to read it. I want to be able to understand it, and that's it. But when you read these bills, these bills have amendments to this and that.
I think there's I agree with that because I do believe that there is far too much what they call pork stuck into certain bills. And trust and believe, I just got through. I just got through looking at a bill that a senator in Mississippi put in. And at the beginning of the bill, it made sense. You get to the middle, and basically, he was trying to get millions of dollars for his district and his district only. But he was trying to do it under the guise of this bill. So, yes, I agree with that. I think when you write a bill, it should be for that specific bill and nothing else.
Right, exactly. Right. A clean bill, as it goes.
Yeah.
Because we keep getting screwed over. The American people keep getting screwed over because of all this other stuff that's in there. And by the time you finish reading, if you actually finish, get through one of those bills, because it's the amendment of Section B, and they don't tell you what that is. You have to go look it up, and they're going to, you know, change it with this and put it with that.
That's
and so by the time you look all these things up,
that's true.
I mean, that's it's so stupid. And you think, what am I, retarded?
Would have to demand that. And probably the only way that something like that would happen is if, you know, some big lobby group, you know, shopped that on the Hill. And I don't see that happening because too many people are making too much money off of all the writers that get attached to these different bills. And so that's part of the whole, what do they call it, brinksmanship in politics, the compromise, the back and forth. And really, and so our